Fantasy Sports Network presents NBA Takeaways.
Welcome to NBA Takeaways, brought to you by the Fantasy Sports Radio Network on the NBA Sound System. I'm your host, Scott Bogman. We've had a lot of crazy stuff happening in the NBA this weekend. A lot of weird stories like Antetokounmpo and Joel Embiid, and we had a trade go down, and we have other trade rumors, and the Bulls, man. Let's start there. Let's start with the Bulls. They lost by 56 points on Saturday. It was the biggest loss in Bulls franchise history. They missed their last 12 shots of the game. How do you describe a game like this? This is hitting absolute dead rock bottom, right? I mean, Daniel Theis, who started for Al Horford, went nuts in this game. He's a great player. 22 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and 4 blocks in this one. But he is not a guy that you expect to see have a line like that. You just don't. Looking over at Chicago, the high score was Shaq Harrison with 20 points. He was 8 of 15 shooting. But here comes the bad here. Justin Holiday, 2 of 10. Lauri Markkanen, 3 of 10. Wendell Carter only played 14 minutes in this one. Zach LaVine was, he was actually 3 of 3, but he only wound up playing 19 minutes because Boylan benched all of the starters in this game. So we saw bench players get a massive amount of minutes because he didn't like the effort. 27 minutes for Jabari Parker, who was 3 of 7. Cameron Payne was 5 of 10 in this game. He had 10 points. Chandler Hutchinson played 21 minutes, 1 of 3. Blackney was 1 of 9. Felicio was 2 of 4. Robin Lopez was 1 of 4. I mean, this was a very strange game, to say the least, because it's rare that you see all of the starters benched in a game, even if they're just not giving a great effort. So it was just, I mean, it's hard to describe this. I mean, 56 points. The biggest win for the Celtics ever was a 51-point win over the Philadelphia Warriors in 1962. So that's the type of record that we're talking about. It also was the largest margin of victory for a road team in NBA history. It tied it by a Seattle win over my Rockets on December 16th of 1986. This game, this is one of those, I mean, the Bulls fans booed the Bulls off the court, and this caused a lot of drama, which is not shocking at all, among the players and the coaches and all this stuff, because the Bulls were coming off back-to-back games, and when you have back-to-back games in the NBA, I mean, it's just a brutal schedule, right? It's 81 games, you're playing back-to-backs, you're flying all over the place. You don't do practices the next day after two straight games. You figure your guys have had enough, and you let them have a day off, and then you come back the next day and you go back to work. Well, that's not what happened this time, because Boylan ran the he's been just running these brutal practices from what I've been hearing, and like he's including sprints and like stuff that you usually do in camp, not stuff that you do in the middle of an NBA season, especially when your team is just coming off an embarrassing loss. And you know, a great win for Boston, I don't want to sell them short at all, because we know they've been struggling this season so far. You know, Kyrie made those comments the other day about hitting rock bottom and all that stuff, and they've just revved up those engines and been churning out wins ever since then. So that's nice, but Boylan, I mean, he said, this was his comments after the game, disappointing effort, disappointing outcome after what I thought was a really hard-fought two games and at home last night. He said, got to give Boston credit. I thought they made shots. They kind of punched us, and we didn't respond. So LaVine said we should all feel embarrassed. I mean, this is a dramatic loss from everything you put together. But anyway, getting back to the practices and everything. So they have practice on Sunday, and the players started a big text chain about possibly boycotting this practice and not showing up because they just don't like how things are going down in Chicago, how these rotations are going. You're having these hard-nosed practices. And I understand what Boylan is doing. You've seen this all over sports. When the new guy comes in, what he wants to do is run the guys that don't want to come to play out of the team, off the team. You saw it. The most prevalent one I can remember was one of those football lives with Dick Vermeil when he came to St. Louis for the Rams, when Kurt Warner was there, and they were all hyped up on Trent Green and how the first season was just undeniably terrible with him at the helm. But he said, I knew what I was doing. I was cutting the fat. I was running these hard practices, and I wanted to see the guys that were going to show up when the going got tough, because those are the guys you want. And I think that's the same thing that Boylan is doing here. And I understand that type of a, you know, that type of a process of cut the fat away from this steak until it looks healthy and good. I get it. But I think when you're running these guys in the ground on a daily basis, and then you have practices that probably aren't necessary, it's just kind of to assert your own dominance, I would think, or at least say, hey, look, we're embarrassed, we have to get back to work. I think you need to say your game plan. And I think not everybody was on the same page here. And that's why we got this threat of a holdout as far as this practice goes and all that stuff. Now, that didn't wind up happening. Basically, a couple guys started this text chain. A couple of veterans said, you're all going to be at practice. I don't know. I would guess maybe Robin Lopez is a guy that has a ton of experience in the NBA. And Jabari Parker is probably one of the more experienced players on the Bulls at this point. So they said, you're going to get your ass to practice, and we're all going to go in here and see what's going on. They talked it out, and I'm looking at an article from Casey Johnson from the Chicago Tribune, and he had a couple quotes that were interesting in here, and he said, this was from Boylan. I think it was just a communication, a little bit of both. Boylan said, this is what I think is necessary today, and the players felt they needed a voice to talk to. And that's cool. That's good. This is a family thing. This is open lines of communication. We're still learning about each other. I've moved over 18 inches, meaning from the assistant coach's chair to the head coach's chair. They're still learning how I want it. There's been a little shock and awe here in the last 7 days, and there's an adjustment to that, and that's okay. And Zach LaVine said, we needed to get a lot of stuff off our chest and be transparent. I don't think the players' toughness should ever be questioned. I think that's on us. I think that's a little bit of what we discussed in our meeting. So, you know, he said, I don't think a lot of the people in this businesses are, at least I'm not. I'm a genuine person. I think I'm very kind, but sometimes the truth hurts. You have to get to the point where you have to be productive. So, I think kind of to bring this all to a head here, we had an ugly loss followed up by what could have been an ugly incident in this practice slash non-practice if the players had decided not to show. Now, Boylan said that he, and I don't know how much of this I buy, but he said that he wanted those guys to come in and do film session and then a couple guys to shoot around. It wasn't going to be one of those hard-nosed running sprints and drills and all this stuff, you know, high school training camp practice. But it was just going to be a film session. And he said that was what I was going to do to build trust with my players. But obviously, that kind of a thing backfired. And, you know, this is all a new process for Boylan as well. Boylan is, you know, the head coach in Chicago now, and he's feeling out things himself. So I think we got a very young team with a lot of talent that is not putting it together as of this year. I don't think by any means that this team is tanking. I think this is just a young team that has yet to find a rhythm and put it all together. I mean, they've been missing pieces left and right this year. Lauri Markkanen just came back. Chris Dunn is just coming back. So they have a lot of stuff going on, and it's been a whirlwind for the Bulls so far, but I think they're going to get back on track, and I like that this got worked out without any weird drama. I mean, if this is dramatic as it gets, I would call that a win for sure. We had a little bit of other drama happening in Philadelphia, which I found interesting because there was this... I always find this so funny. There is a report that Joel Embiid is not happy about the trade. And then there's a report that Joel Embiid was reporting that he is not upset by the trade. He's more upset by himself. So there's just all this stuff going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And it's really two things. This is exactly what Joel Embiid said. He said, since the trade, it's been really down. I tend to get triple teamed a lot. I was in the flow of the offense. I feel like I'm not anymore. That's not a lot of possession. There's not a lot of possessions on the block. I don't know. We got to figure it out. So people took that and said, Joel Embiid unhappy with Jimmy Butler trade. Now, I think in some cases, maybe you can take that point and say, okay, yeah, that's what he's saying. That's what he's saying, and that's what he means. But I just don't think that in this context that is saying, I mean, because it's only been a handful of games here. I don't think that Joel Embiid is saying, man, we shouldn't have done that Jimmy Butler trade. I'm really upset that we've been winning games since that Jimmy Butler trade. I think what he's saying is the offense has changed, and I would like to be involved, please. I'm one of the best players on the team, so we need to figure out how we can win and how I can be involved too. Now, you know, every player has an ego. Every player wants to be involved. I think you don't succeed at the level that these guys are at unless you have somewhat of an ego. It doesn't have to be gigantic and all that stuff, but Joel Embiid pulls no punches, man. He tells you like it is. So this is kind of maybe it's a strange statement from him when he usually just says, you know, I own property in Andre Drummond's head. You know, he likes to say stuff like that. So this was a little bit ambiguous and open to interpretation, but I think the interpretation got a little bit turned around and twisted. I don't think that that is what Joel Embiid meant at all. And I think that his next game, he'll probably go crazy and kind of want to stick it in some reporters' faces and say, this is what I meant. Now I want to be involved. And that'll be interesting to see. Philly's next game is tonight against Detroit, against Andre Drummond. That should be a really fun one. I think that Joel Embiid will be fine. I don't think there's any problem with Jimmy Butler. I don't think anyone asked Jimmy Butler. I didn't see his comments on it at all. He probably just rolled his eyes, you know. They'll get Joel Embiid involved, and they'll all work together. That is what that's what this part of the season is kind of for, especially after you do a big trade to shake up your entire team. Things like this are going to happen. Joel Embiid will be fine. So there was also some interesting comments from Giannis Antetokounmpo, I don't know how everybody has a different way to say his name. I just call him GA. But this was kind of weird. He doesn't want to work out with other superstars. This was his quotes about it. I can't work out with you in the summer and then play you in a few months. It feels weird. It doesn't feel right with me. Like other players, it's cool for other players, but I don't want to. Other guys do it. He also said that he doesn't like taking pictures with opponents or going to dinner with them. He said, I feel like LeBron and KD, KD did that to LeBron, take a lot of his thoughts and use it against him. And that's what I don't want guys doing to me. So this was, I can't tell if I really, really, really like this or if I'm like, what is he talking about? I think I like it. I think I like that mindset of a player kind of going old school and saying, nah, man, I don't care. I'm not going to take a picture with you. You're my enemy. And I think that is something that could possibly drive him night in and night out. And I think it's probably a good thing. And I mean, I don't know if you would even call GA a budding superstar at this point anymore. I think you would just call him a superstar. So to see this superstar from this perspective is kind of strange because he was invited to workout, I think, with LeBron and KD and Carmelo. I think that was the workout group from this offseason. And he declined. He didn't want to. And he can learn a lot from those guys, which is surprising. But like I said, as he sees it, KD went in there, learned stuff from LeBron, and really went in to work his weaknesses, like this is an episode of The Americans or something. And like he was a spy and he saw all the weaknesses from LeBron and went out there and exposed them when they played in the finals. So, I mean, maybe he did. I don't know. But I think maybe it's overreaching a little bit. It's just funny because I like it from a competitor standpoint, 100%. But at the end of the day, I think we're all, you know, we all love the NBA. And for these guys specifically, they're all players and they kind of need to have each other's back. I mean, they're all in the union together. There's off-court things and there's on-court things. Like, maybe you don't want to work out with these guys, but is it wrong to be friends with them? Maybe even take a picture with them? I think that's fine. So I think parts of this I like because it shows just the absolute over-the-top intense competitiveness of GA and what he's bringing in. I mean, hey, the Bucks are great this year. They're second in the East right now. They have a great record. They're ahead of Philly. They're just behind Toronto. So everything that GA has been talking about has been right. Now, there has been a little bit of drama with this Chris Middleton stuff where him and Coach Budenholzer got into it, but I don't know what's going on there because they asked Chris Middleton about it and he said, no, it's just been a normal week around here. I don't know what you guys are talking about at all. He's kind of playing the, we had a conversation and we moved on and that's that. So I don't know if that's an actual issue they're going to have. I mean, I guess we'll know if they would wind up moving a guy like Chris Middleton, which I can't imagine happens unless Chris Middleton says, I want out of here. Which is one of those I'll believe it when I see it kind of comment. But I don't think that's happening. That's probably a nothing story, probably a disagreement. And they're good to go now. But anyway, getting back to the GA and not wanting to be friendly or work out with any of these other players, I always kind of found it weird to just absolutely hate these guys. Now, a lot of the times you'll see intense super competitors. They just can't like the guy they're playing against. They just can't do it. I remember Randy Johnson, he just couldn't be nice during his entire MLB career. If you guys remember him, he was I'm sorry to bring it back to Arizona sports, but for lack of a better word, the guy was kind of known as a jerk. Wasn't very nice to his teammates. I mean, I don't think he was hateful towards them, but they just knew, Randy's not really chatty Cathy at all. He's intense. And especially on the days where he would pitch, he was super intense. So it was just a don't mess with Randy, he won't mess with you kind of a thing. And he kind of carried that into the offseason. Now, in his retirement, I couldn't be a nicer guy. I see him out. He's basically a politician, kissing babies and signing autographs and all kinds of stuff like that. Maybe that is what we're going to have in a guy like GA. Maybe he is going to be a dude that just like he just can't be nice until, his career is over or it's the off season or whatever. He just has that insane competitive drive. But, it's also on the other hand, I think that you got to be able to separate that stuff. Because if you look back at your NBA career and you spent all this time here with all these players, especially your teammates, and I've never heard a bad thing said about GA, so I don't think that this is going on with your teammates. But at the end of the day, I mean, I know there are some of these guys that, they just can't get along. They don't like each other, and they probably never will. We saw that with Cat and Jimmy Butler, and that's why they needed a trade. You don't have to like everybody, but I think you should like most of the guys in your own profession, because when you can't play anymore and the game is done with you and it's done with everybody at some point, you want to still be able to be in the community. And that's why I never got, even as fans, I always found it ridiculous when I went to any type of a stadium. Didn't matter. I mean, you see it most in the NFL just because the NFL people will tailgate for hours and hours and hours before the games because they play so few games and make it a whole day event. You know, you can go to an NBA game once a week at least. So they don't
tailgate and stuff like that. But anyway, I always found it ridiculous to see these people fighting each other over the game. Like, shouldn't we be, shouldn't the football fans, the basketball fans, the baseball fans be upset with the people that don't like our sport more than we are with each other? And not even upset with them, just not understand them. Like, I understand the intensity of the guy sitting next to me when I'm at the game. And I also know that when I live in Phoenix and I'm a Houston Rockets fan, I go into that stadium, you know, I'm the enemy there. So I'm going to get some boos as long as it's, you know, as long as it's friendly, I'm fine with it. Boo me all you want. I'm the guy on the road. And when I'm a Diamond, you know, I told you guys I'm a Diamondbacks fan. When, you know, they're playing whoever, they're playing the Dodgers and the Dodger fans are there and I boo them, but I smile. You know, it's just a funny ribbing. It's just a rivalry. I don't even know how we got here from all that. But GA not liking to practice with his other peers, his other superstars, I guess is how we got here. That was a very interesting story. We also had a trade. Speaking of the Bucks, the Bucks were involved in a trade this week in which they received George Hill, Jason Smith, and a second-round pick. Cleveland got Matthew Dellavedova, John Henson, and draft picks. In Washington, it's a three-way deal here. Sam Decker is what they got, and they swapped a second round with Cleveland. And to be honest, this is kind of a boring trade. I mean, Milwaukee gets George Hill, right? So he was averaging, I believe, somewhere around 26 and a half minutes in the games that he played with the Cavs before, you know, they instituted the Colin Sexton gets all of the minutes rule here. But George Hill can be productive. We've seen him be a very good player in the past. And so he goes over to Milwaukee, but more of this is about Milwaukee. You know, we were talking about Chris Middleton before, getting cap space for next season because the contract for George Hill is $20 million for next year, but he's only guaranteed one. So they can cut him, pay him his $1 million, and have $19 million left of cap space. But I found the most interesting part of this trade in a Reddit post. And I know I've told you guys I'm a nerd and I go on Reddit on occasion. But this, and I want to just give credit where it's due, this user, his name on Reddit is NeitherKale3. He pointed out that the Wizards have traded the same 2020 second round pick to the Bucks in three different trades. The first one was in June of 2015, where the Wizards trade their 2020 second round pick to the Bucks in exchange for Jared Dudley, but they protected it as a top 55. Then, later on, in October of this season, the Wizards traded Jody Meeks to the Bucks in order to reduce the luxury tax bill. To convince the Bucks to take Meeks, the Wizards changed the protection on the 2020 second. They owed Milwaukee to being just top 45 protected. So then, in this part of the deal, the Wizards acquired Sam Decker from the Cavs while sending Jason Smith and a 2021 second to the Bucks. Also, as part of this deal, the Wizards removed all the protections on the 2020 second round pick, guaranteeing that the 2020 pick is now officially the it's now officially the Cavs pick. This was just so crazy. I don't know how people notice this or pick up on it. I guess it's not that big of a deal. But, you know, most of the time when you look at these trades, it's just, and a pick, and this pick. And then when you get to, my favorite is looking at the past drafts. When you go on NBA.com and you see all the little asterisks and stars and all that kind of stuff where it's like, yeah, this pick went through here, from here to there, from here. And it's they're batted around, some of these picks. I just found that was very interesting. In a boring trade, you can still find some little interesting news and notes for sure. A few other things going on in the NBA. We saw that DeMarcus Cousins is going to practice in the G League tonight. So that is a huge step for him, of course, recovering from the Achilles surgery last season. And that injury is usually a pretty dang bad one. But DeMarcus Cousins has just been an absolute freak at returning from this. So this can ruin guys' careers. And he is already coming back. I hope he's not pushing himself too hard. I don't think he is either. And one thing is guaranteed here, that there is just not a chance that the Warriors are going to overextend DeMarcus Cousins at all during the regular season. Now, when we get to the postseason, he's going to be a big part of the plan. So they do need to integrate him into the offense and get him familiar with everything. And him returning, of course, makes that easier. The earlier he returns, the quicker he can be integrated, even if it's low minutes, you know, and I kind of think that that's what it's going to be. I was talking about this on another show I do with a couple of my colleagues, and we were talking about the fantasy implications for DeMarcus Cousins, and the Welsh and I differ. I think that he's probably only going to get somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 12 minutes through the end of January, should he be playing in games by then. And because this is no guarantee. I mean, any sort of twinge, pinch, anything in there, any kind of discomfort, and they will shut him right down. Because the whole point of getting him, especially on the cheap contract, is for him to be able to earn a big contract next year for him and for the Warriors to use him during the playoffs. So, and it only takes about a month. Now, the longer you can be in there, the better, of course. But I think he's going to play very, very low minutes through probably up to the All-Star break. And after that is when you really start ramping him up. And I mean, the Warriors aren't even at full strength now. They should be today. Draymond Green is supposed to come back. So fingers crossed. Hopefully everything goes right for him through all the warm-ups and stuff, and we can get him back. A couple other weird things happened this week. I just wanted to point these out since I'm not going through box scores like I normally do. John Wall only scored 1 point in a blowout loss to Cleveland, which are things I didn't think I would be saying today. Cleveland beat Washington 116-101, who had been playing a lot better since their early season drama, but he missed a previous game for personal reasons, and he missed shoot around because of an illness. So if there was ever a time that he was going to bottom out, it looks like that was it. And Kyle Lowry didn't score any points last night. He was blanked 0-for-5 from the field. Milwaukee beats Toronto 104-99. And I didn't want to mention this one, but I feel like I have to. Luka Doncic went on an 11-0 run against the Rockets in the last 3 minutes of the game to lift the Mavericks past my Rockets. Was not happy about that one at all, of course. And we have a big, big slate of NBA action going on tonight, this Monday night. We have got Washington at Indiana. We've got the Detroit at Philadelphia game I mentioned. New Orleans at Boston. Sacramento at Chicago. Hopefully Chicago can get back on the horse there. Cleveland at Milwaukee. Utah at Oklahoma City. Orlando at Dallas. Memphis at Denver. The Clippers at Phoenix. Minnesota at Golden State. And Miami at the LA Lakers. And that will be the final matchup between LeBron and Dwayne Wade. So expect some emotions in that one. Like that guy, I don't know if you guys saw him. There was a fan at the Phoenix versus Miami game in Phoenix, and he got Dwayne Wade sneakers, and then he was so overcome with emotion, he started to cry after that. I thought that was a pretty cool moment, but that's how I'm going to end it. I hope you guys have a great NBA week, great NBA day, and thank you for listening to NBA Takeaways on the NBA Sound System.
For more NBA content, be sure to check out the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube stream.